Hi, I'm Darren Vaughn. I'm the Communications Director with the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, and today I'm here with Nick Foreman. Nick, what's your role with the department?
So I'm the Carnivore and Small Mammal Program Manager. Basically, I oversee our bear and cougar program, our fur bearer program, and then our non-game mammal program. So a big suite of species there, but of course, usually taking the spotlight is bears and cougars.
So, So what work are you currently doing?
So it's August. We're beginning to wrap up our summer field season, which is our summer bear study that we do. And right now, bears are kind of getting ready to kick it into high gear to put weight on for the winter, and we're finishing that up. But then we're also working on our bear and cougar rule development process as well.
So tell me a little bit about the bear and cougar rule and some of the process that you're going through right now.
Sure. So the bear and cougar rule sets kind of the structure and regulations for bear and cougar hunting. We do all kinds of research, monitoring, habitat work to benefit wildlife kind of throughout the state. But we also put a lot of work into ensuring that our hunting opportunities that we allow are sustainable and that they're based on kind of the best available science. So we focus that work to make sure we have sustainable populations for present and future generations, and for them to be around so that people can enjoy them kind of in the variety of ways that they enjoy them, whether it's hunting, wildlife watching, or whatever.
So how does the department go about managing bear and cougar hunting, and you know, what's the structure that is used in the bear and cougar rule?
Sure, so we manage our bear and cougar hunting with a zone-based system. So what that does is it divides the state kind of into zones, which represent contiguous areas kind of bear or cougar habitat. So areas where we've got a lot of habitat kind of lumped together. We have kind of these sky islands here in New Mexico. And those are kind of then separated by kind of non-habitat or non-preferred habitat for these species. And within those kind of big chunks of habitat or kind of big chunks of connected habitat, we expect kind of more localized population dynamics to be going on. But then, you know, we kind of recognize, of course, bears and cougars are capable of big movements. So there is some mixing and exchange kind of going on between zones, but we manage kind of based on those localized population dynamics that we expect, and then kind of how people engage with those animals kind of in a local area as well. So then within that kind of zone structure, for each zone, we then make a population estimate. The method that we've been using kind of is based on there's a habitat model where we kind of modeled what bear habitat there is or what cougar habitat there is out there, and then we apply a density estimate to that. And so we have studies for bears that were done in kind of 2001 and 2012 and 2015, and we had density estimates kind of from those studies for bears. We have some other studies that were done in New Mexico as well for densities for cougars. And so what we then take is the amount of habitat that's in a zone and multiply that by density estimates for those areas. And then you get kind of a population estimate. For bears, we only applied kind of a density estimate to just primary habitat for a zone. The habitat model we have classified secondary and edge habitat that we know bears use as well. But for that method, we just use primary habitat. And then for cougars, we had kind of a range of habitat categories, and we applied different densities to each of those. And so with that, you know, we then have a zone, and we come up with a population estimate. So each zone has its population estimate. Statewide, we're estimating for bears right around 8,000 bears statewide, and then about 3,500 cougars statewide. So then we have this population estimate, and then what we do is we set a harvest limit. So we look at how we need to structure hunting so that people can engage with and enjoy with these populations and bears and cougars if they choose to hunt. And then we got to make sure that that hunt is sustainable and that it's not going to have any negative impacts on the population. And so there are long-term studies kind of in the literature that have showed what level or what amount of hunting bear and cougar populations can kind of sustain without showing kind of any negative trends. So for bears here in New Mexico, what we have is if hunting removes less than 12% of the population, 12% of independent age bears, then you wouldn't see any negative impact. So we manage kind of our harvest at 8 to 10 to 12% of our population estimate is the maximum amount of bears that we could have harvested without seeing a negative impact on the population size. For cougars, research has found that removing about 17% of independent age cougars through hunting didn't have a negative impact on population size. And so that sets kind of then a total limit for hunting. We can allow this many animals to be taken, and if you take that many or less, then you won't see a negative population trend. We then restrict hunting even further by implementing this female sublimit. And so we then, if we have a total limit, we then limit the number of females taken by hunting that it can't, for bears, exceed 40% of the total limit. So 40% of the total harvest limit can't be female bears. And then for cougars, it's 30%. So say we have a population of 100 bears, we set a 10% total harvest limit. So that allows 10 bears to be taken in a zone. We then have that female harvest limit at 40%. So only 4 females can be taken within that zone. So if the first 4 bears that are taken are female, that zone closes the hunting there. If there's, say, 5 males taken and 4 females taken, that zone would close. Or if there's, say, you know, 7 males taken and 3 females taken, that zone would close at the total limit. So that female harvest limit, whenever it's reached, will close a total zone. That's to protect kind of the breeding capacity of the population. And so we have kind of that even further restriction on there to make sure that our harvest is sustainable. On top of that, you know, we have regulations in place that it's illegal to kill any cubs or any kittens. And then it's also illegal to kill any female that's accompanied by a cub or kittens, just to kind of protect that even further. So we have kind of, then we go from that dividing the state into zones, getting a population estimate, and then we set a harvest limit. And that's kind of, that harvest limit is the maximum amount of independent age individuals that we'll allow to be harvested. It's just a limit. It's just the point that we know if we remove that many or less, we won't have a negative impact on the population trend. It's not a quota. It's not a goal. We don't try and reach that amount. We just allow that amount of opportunity because we know below that our harvest will be sustainable, and we won't have any negative impact on the population. And kind of what it looks like then on the ground is year to year, most zones see less than 10% harvest for bears, see less than 17% harvest for cougars. So typically in a given year, we have 85 to 90% of the population kind of remains on the landscape. Those bears and cougars are out there being part of the ecosystem, playing the role that they're meant to play, and they're out there for everyone to enjoy as well. It's just kind of that percentage that might be removed through hunting. And some of kind of what restricts that and has harvest kind of below those total harvest limits is New Mexico is a huge state. We've got a lot of big wilderness areas, a lot of really rugged areas, a lot of kind of what we call refugia for these species. And so places where the population isn't impacted by hunting, and those can oftentimes act as kind of a source, and it acts, you know, we just don't have hunting going on in those areas. And on top of that, just hunting in New Mexico is difficult. It's rugged terrain, it's rough terrain, there's a lot of hard spots to get to. And so kind of the result of this hunting structure is that we have bear and cougar populations that persist on the landscape and kind of provide all those benefits to the ecosystem that are around for everyone to enjoy. And then, you know, we allow this small percentage to be taken as well without having a negative impact on the population.
You know, with that structure in place, then what kind of research are you doing to inform the decision about those zone boundaries and population size?
So within kind of that management structure and the zone structure, that the key piece of information that we try and get is the population estimate. And so that's what we've been working on for the past 5 years, doing a lot of work year round, essentially. And this is for two species that are traditionally hard to count. They're cryptic. They prefer to stay out of sight. You know, capture rates are slower. You know, you're not flying a helicopter over and being able to catch them like that. And so traditionally, it's been hard to count these animals. But we've got kind of these advances in monitoring techniques, non-invasive sampling, ways that we can sample these animals without actually having to get our hands on them that really amplify our sampling effort and our efficacy out there. And so what with that, and combined with kind of some of the advances that we've had in statistical modeling and population modeling, we've got these in-depth, really precise views. So kind of on that then, you know, these population estimates that we're trying to get, what we've been doing for bears previously from that study in 2001 where we got those densities, they were really using the hands-on approach, getting out and capturing bears, putting radio tracking collars on them and actually having to radio track collar them up and over hills and everything like that. They used a lot of kind of more hands-on techniques to kind of get their population estimates. In 2012 and 2015, there was a PhD student at New Mexico State University who implemented a study using this non-invasive sampling. So for bears, that's non-invasive genetic sampling. And what we do there is we use bear hair snares. And so we put out barbed wire wrapped around a few trees and put a bait in the middle, and the bears come to the bait, and the barbed wire pulls hair out of them. Mm-hmm. That hair then is a source of genetic information for us, and from it we can actually make individual identifications of bears. And those kind of serve as our captures. With this method, we can put out a lot of these sites over a really large area, and we can cover, you know, almost a management zone there and get really a really zone-wide estimate or as close to it as possible. And so for bears, that's what we started doing in 2019. We went up to Bear Management Zone 1, which is the Hemez Mountains kind of up to the Colorado border. We had 180 sites out there in 2019, and we ended up detecting 94 bears and capturing them kind of across different hair snares, getting them not just at the same one over time, but at different sites. And from that, we got a population estimate of 1,681 bears. We then, in 2020 and 2021, went to Bear Management Zone 10, which is down in the Gila area. Over those 2 years, we set up 349 sites and ended up capturing 270 bears. So, I mean, if you think about that, in 2 years, catching 270 bears, if you're doing that around the clock, it'd still be a hard number of bears to catch, and that's unique bears. So, this method really allowed us to capture a lot of animals, get a lot of captures, get a lot of recaptures, see how they're kind of moving around. And from that study down in the Gila over those 2 years in 2020 and 21, we got a population estimate then of 2,461 bears. And those estimates that we're getting, kind of using this method of generating a lot of data, and then the statistical models can kind of accommodate for, okay, we've got bears occurring over different spaces. It really accommodates kind of differences between males and females and how they're moving around. It accounts for the fact that these are baited sites, so bears are going to keep coming back. We can include all these different variables into these models, and the result is these really precise estimates that are really great, kind of then compared to previous methods that we were using, where you kind of have a bit bigger confidence intervals and things like that. For cougars then, we, as I mentioned before, we kind of had the habitat map, and we had a few studies in New Mexico for getting at densities. We also kind of look at the literature in neighboring states and things like that. And then we applied densities to that habitat map. What we've been working on with cougars is almost similar to the bears of using a somewhat non-invasive technique with trail cameras, but also putting out some of these tracking collars as well on online. So we go out, put GPS collars on them. That serves as kind of a mark. We have these marked animals with GPS collars that we know. And then we put out hundreds of trail cameras in a zone. And as lions with collars or without collars go across these cameras, we're getting kind of this capture history of where they are and where they're occurring. The GPS collars then are also feeding us information, and we're getting information on where they are on the landscape and how they're moving around. And for cougars especially, that are really hard to track and find, having a GPS tracking collar on them, we see where they're going, you know, throughout the year, and we're able to track them almost in real time. And so with that camera and collar method, then we're generating a lot of data for this cryptic species. And so in 2017 and 2018, we were, again, for cougars, we were working up in kind of the Hemez Mountains up to the Colorado border. We got a population estimate there. And then in 2019, we started working down in Cougar Management Zone Q, which is kind of the Sacramento Mountains and the Guadalupe Mountains. And we were there from 2019 to 2021, captured, I think, some 30 captures, had about 20, 25 GPS collars out there, and got a population estimate from that study as well. And for an animal that's so hard to kind of get your hands on or get your eyes on, we actually got these really precise estimates, and they are kind of giving us some robust data, and we're able to kind of move forward with updating our harvest limits off of those population estimates then from that. And all of these models too, you know, these are kind of conservative models when there's, you know, maybe pieces of the landscape where you don't have a lot of observations, they kind of assume a lower density. And so all these models that we're using are on the conservative side. And then we look at them from a conservative way, from a conservative perspective as well, to make sure we're trying to minimize any kind of impact that could happen on the population, and that we're being conservative with our estimates to make sure that, you know, while we're allowing an opportunity, we're not going to have any impact through hunting on these populations.
Mm-hmm. Better to guess low on those numbers than to...
Right.
Then to assume that there's more than there are, and then you set the harvest limit too high, and
right.
you actually, yeah, that could turn out poorly.
Right. And so even being conservative with these estimates too, you know, 2018, 2019, up through 2021, this is all these studies have been occurring kind of during this historic drought that we've had. And so mm-hmm. we're getting kind of a baseline estimate for here, okay, here's bear and cougar population estimates at a time when maybe conditions aren't in their prime. And the mm-hmm. same kind of that it goes with fire as well. We're getting these population estimates, especially down in the Gila in 2020 and 2021. We had the Johnson fire, we had the Tadpole fire, we had the a few other fires. The Good Fire happened, I think, that year too. So we were getting these estimates kind of in kind of real life conditions where we are mm-hmm. seeing these fires. And so we're getting population estimates during this time. And so it is able to give us a kind of a good baseline, a good understanding of how these populations are in real time right now.
So is there other research or monitoring that you're doing as you look at other dynamics?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we kind of talk about drought and wildfire, one thing that our bear and cougar biologist does annually is he goes out and does mass surveys. So it's an annual survey. He goes to different mountain ranges across the state. And looks at mast. So essentially this is kind of acorns, you know, a hard mast is what we think of as like acorns, and then there's kind of soft mast like berries and fruits and things like that, choke cherries, juniper berries, all these foods that bears key in on. And so these mast surveys are kind of a survey of, okay, what's the state of bear food out across the state? And so we go out and we kind of just get this general impression of well, how are food resources looking for bears? And what's been interesting, and, you know, as I said, kind of over these past 3 or 4 years, we've been in this drought, or over these past 10, however many years we've been in this long drought. Over the past 3 or 4 years, what we've been seeing is really good food sources for bears, a really abundant mast crop and a lot of food out there for bears. And really, this has to do kind of with the timing of our monsoons. If our monsoons come at the right time and we get a good monsoon or even an average monsoon, that timing is really important for things like oak to produce a good mast crop, a good acorn crop for these bears. And so the timing has been really good over these past 3 or 4 years, despite being in this extended drought. We've had good food sources out there. We've had years in the past, you know, the early 2010s where we had poor kind of mast out there. In those poor mast production years, kind of expect lower cub survival. Bears looking for food sources other than natural food sources, so sometimes coming into town, things like that. But in good years, you kind of expect but better cub survival, so that population's probably growing a bit. You have less competition between the bears, and then kind of more natural food sources, so bears stay out in the mountains. So we kind of go out there and get that impression of, well, what does the state of bear food look like out there? And that can just kind of help us keep kind of tabs on the population, what we might expect might be going on. Like I mentioned, for cougars, we're putting GPS collars on cougars out there for that trail camera and collar study. We've also been putting GPS tracking collars on bears as well. And that's the kind of look at all kinds of things. So we'll be looking at habitat use. We can look at actually interactions between our carnivores. So there we see kind of bears and cougars actually have interactions with each other as bears kind of bump cougars off of their kills and they scavenge on those. So there's some studies going on that are looking at that. And we're also kind of then able to look at things, especially for like bears, look at reproduction, go and visit these den sites to make sure collar fit is good. But at the same time, for female bears, we can go and look at, okay, how many cubs are they having this year, and that kind of thing. And then really just from this collar data, we're tracking these animals. These collars last for 3-4 years. We're able to track them for that whole time. So we actually get to look at survival, and we can kind of get, with all these different studies we have going on across different areas of the state, we can actually look at survival and how animals are faring and doing in different areas of the state from the collar data. And then in addition to that, so we go out and do the mass surveys. We have these GPS collars that are out there. We have our population estimate studies with hair snares or the cameras and collars. Then we also have actually data coming in through the hunter harvest. So when a hunter takes a bear or a cougar, it's mandatory that they bring it into Game and Fish Official for it to be checked and pelt tagged. And at that time, we actually take a set of data from it as well. And so, you know, we're recording kind of the sex of the animal, but then also like taking genetic samples off of it. And we have, one thing we actually do for both species is we then take a tooth. And for bears especially, as an animal gets older, its teeth kind of fill in, and it fills in almost like a tree. And for bears, that's especially true because if you think about it, bears are really active during the summer, putting on a lot of weight, and so they're growing a lot, so you get kind of this wide growth ring. And then during the winters, bears are hibernating, so you get a tight, dark ring there from that. And so you can actually count the rings on it like rings on a tree, and you can see how old a bear is when it was taken or when it died. From that too, you don't just get kind of the age with females. You can actually look at, well, they had a really skinny growth ring this summer, but then a big one the next summer. Well, during those skinny growth rings, they're actually putting all their energy into raising cubs. They're not putting it into their own growth. And so you get actually the years that they had cubs and how you can get kind of a count of when they were having cubs, but you also get that first age of when they had cubs. And so that's what we call kind of prima parity, the age that they first have a litter of cubs. And for bears, we're able to monitor that for females, and it's right about 4.5 years old is when female bears are having their cubs across the state. So we're able to monitor those things, maybe able to monitor then kind of the age classes in the hunter harvest, and see kind of the proportions of older age animals to younger age animals, and that can actually tell us kind of some things about the population as well. So we monitor that harvest as well. And then one big piece that we're putting in into place right now is what's called an integrated population model. So I kind of mentioned we have data from the population estimates that we're getting from our hair snare studies or our collar and camera studies. We then kind of have some of this collar data for the different animals. What's survival look like? What does reproduction look like? Habitat use. We then also, for that harvest data that we've collected from hunters, that's it for, I think for cougars, it's a 20-year data set. For bears, it's just about the same too. That's 20 years of data. And these integrated population models that we're building take all those data sources and put it in, and it actually kind of is a way to monitor the population both kind of in the past and over those past 20 years. How has the population kind of fared? And then we can kind of do a bit of forecasting into the future too under different conditions, or kind of make different predictions about conditions or ask questions about conditions and be able to see how the population is going to fare kind of in the next couple years too. And these population models are this huge kind of undertaking, multiple or like thousands of iterations they run upon themselves. Well, what if the data did this or this or this? And they're running that over and over again. And it really gives us another great tool with a lot of data to monitor these populations and look at how things are happening. And it really, we're able to look at it year to year then. Instead of having to do a big study, which takes a full year and then takes a long time for us to analyze the data as well, these population models will be able to look basically across all zones year to year and be able to kind of track the population and see how things are going. And it can accommodate, like I said, all these different data sets. We can say, okay, well, maybe what if we say snow is better this year, which is a big impact for how effective cougar hunting is. We can look at, well, what about drought and things like that. We're able to incorporate some of this stuff and get these really in-depth looks at our populations and how they're faring. So it's a big undertaking. It's a big statistical thing. We're working with independent statisticians to build those models for us and help us kind of better understand what's going on out there. But we're really trying to use every tool that we can to monitor these populations, you know, make sure our hunter harvests aren't having negative impact, but also just look at these populations and how they're going. And I think what's kind of encouraging, and you know, this is across North America that we're seeing, our bear and cougar populations are expanding. In some places, these populations are growing, but in geographic range, these animals are expanding. We have these large carnivores that are really doing well, and they're going back into places where they weren't before. The populations are growing and persisting, you know, and for both those species, this is while you have regulated hunter harvest going on, these populations are doing really well. And if you look at large carnivores kind of across the world, that's not the case. You know, a lot of large carnivore populations are having a hard time with different changing conditions. But in North America, I think we can, you know, kind of take some pride and be encouraged by the fact that we have these large carnivores out there on the landscape. People are able to enjoy them in different ways, and the animal populations are actually thriving out there and able to do what they do best out on the landscape as well.
So with all of that data in hand, how are you taking that data and then coming up with proposals for this year's rural development cycle?
Sure. So to kind of go back, I guess, to kind of those population estimates that we got from the hare snares. So bear management zone one, when we went up to the Hemas in 2019, I think we found that that population estimate was about 1,681. Previously, we were estimating 1,580. So our new population estimate says there's maybe about 100 more bears than we were previously estimating. Mm-hmm. That's not a huge difference between the two, and it's not a huge growth, and it's actually encouraging. Bear population is probably about the same there, maybe a little bigger. The new models we were using accounted for kind of all habitat types, so now we're not just estimating for primary habitat, but also kind of secondary and edge habitat too, and we know those animals are out there, we just weren't accounting for it before. So that could probably account for kind of some of that slight increase that we see. And so for bear management zone one, with that 10% harvest limit in place, we're going from a harvest limit of 158 to, I think it's 168. So 10 more bears on the harvest limit there. So just a slight increase with that zone. In bear management zone 10, where we were in the Gila area from 2020 to 2021, our previous estimates using the old traditional techniques, actual radio telemetry, getting your hands on, our previous estimates were 1,451, or about 9 bears per 100 square kilometers of primary habitat. Mm-hmm. What we're now estimating is about 2,400 bears. So we're estimating that there's 1,000 more bears there than we were previously accounting for. That density estimate that we get from this new data is about 16 bears per 100 square kilometers of primary habitat. Why that's important is 16 bears per 100 square kilometers of primary habitat is what we estimate for our bear management zones 12 and 13, and that was using hare snare study as well. It's what we just estimated just about for in bear management zone 1. And we know that the Gila is great bear habitat. It's really a huge piece of really good bear habitat. So our new data is showing densities that are actually similar to other parts of the state where we were estimating, whereas our using the traditional methods, our estimates were about half of what we estimated for other areas, which really, you know, doesn't quite make sense. And so these new estimates line up with what we're seeing other places. And so with kind of then our population estimates showing a lot more bears than we were previously estimating, we're proposing to increase the number of bears on the harvest limit there as well. And so I think we're going with 192 bears can be taken in the Gila area, where previously it was 148. That 192 is actually an 8% harvest limit. We're going to go conservative there. Just with this new population estimate, we'll go conservative. Again, monitor this population year to year like we're going to be able to do, and make sure, again, that these higher harvest limits aren't having a negative impact, which is what we expect because we're harvesting at these low rates. And these population estimates are in line with what we're seeing in other places. Our studies then with cougars using the trail cameras and collars, the last rule cycle in 2019, we incorporated the data from up in the Hemas area. We lowered estimates in 2019 there, and then we lowered a harvest limit there as well. It's looking like it's the same thing too for cougar management zone Q. What we saw was lower density estimates than we were previously estimating, and so we're actually lowering our harvest limit there to, I think, what's 17 is going to be the total harvest limit for cougar management zone Q. So we're actually decreasing harvest limits for cougars in that zone based on the studies that we've done. And so those are kind of just based off the population estimates. We're making those two proposals. And then kind of more from our research too, we've been on the ground in the northeast part of the state, around the Raton area, what are our bear management zone 5 and bear management zone 7. And we've been doing hair snare studies out there and actually putting the GPS tracking collars out there. And we're proposing to essentially dissolve bear management zone 7 into its neighboring bear management zones. And that's kind of just based on what we've seen on the ground from bear habitat. There's the GMU that's just to the east of Raton there. Is really similar in bear habitat to what's on the west side of I-25 in bear management zone 5. And so we'll take that GMU 57 and put that into bear management zone 5. And then the habitat that's kind of further east, going essentially from Folsom to the Oklahoma-Texas state line, that's really similar to kind of what's to the south in bear management zone 6. And so I think that's GMU's 57, or 56 and 58, those will go into bear management zone 6. And just based on habitat, what we've seen kind of with our hair snare work, being out there on the ground, seeing a bit of our collar data, and then also what we know about kind of on I-25, that Raton Pass corridor there, we get bear mortalities on the road there as bears are kind of crossing the interstate. And so we know that there's kind of some connection going on there, and then the habitat similarity. So we'll take bear management zone 7 and split it into the two neighboring zones and kind of reallocate the harvest limits from that too. But all based on kind of what we're seeing on the ground with our collar data and what we've been seeing as we're out there doing hair snares.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to add that we might be missing? I mean, obviously the rule hearing for this is coming up here in just a couple weeks, and public comment period is open. Anything else that the public ought to know is that's all coming up?
Sure. I mean, we have on the website under the commission tab there, you can look at our proposals. There's also the email address where folks can send their public comment and have it be part of the public record. Sending those comments to that email address is the best way to have it be part of the public record. Mm-hmm. Just please give us your input. Let us know what you think about our proposals, if you had any other ideas and things like that. And essentially, you know, other than that, I hope folks are encouraged. We're out there, like I said, working 365 days a year, essentially, doing study after study, moving across the state and trying to cover as much ground as we can, and put as much of these advanced statistical things in place without boring everyone, but getting really, really cool results from it and really interesting results. And so, you know, I hope people are interested in this stuff and encouraged that we're out there doing this work and we're trying to make sure we do right by the resource. And we're really encouraged that we'll have bear and cougar populations out there for everyone to enjoy. And the research will be able to allow us to keep tabs on these populations too. And so I'm encouraged by it, and I hope other folks are too.